Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Black Label presents Heavy Montreal, the heaviest festival in Canada. Back for a 10th edition. 2 days of rock and metal. July 27th and 28th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau. Witness Slayer perform their last show in Quebec ever. Performances by Ghost, Godsmack, Evanescence, Slash, Anthrax, Steel Panther, Killswitch Engage, and many more. 40 bands playing 4 stages on a festival site that you have to see to believe. Festival passes are on sale now. Visit HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Avenco.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Ah!
Mark Striegel. Welcome back. A little bonus episode here. Yeah, I got a lot of interviews. I hadn't done any for a while, and then I did like, you know, eight of them. So I got to get them out to you guys. We got Steve Lynch, an amazing guitar player. One of the first people to ever go to the Guitar Institute of Technology in Hollywood. He's going to tell us all about that. And we got Doro Pesch. She's here too. Steve's been on the podcast before. Doro has not. So I always love these first timers. Here we are, 798 episodes in, and we are only just getting to Doro for the first time. At least I think. Sometimes I forget, but I'm fairly certain she has not been on the podcast because I know I would remember that. And yeah, Steve Lynch, of course, of the band Autograph. We just heard the song Loud and Clear. Remember that one from back in the day, guys? Yeah, Ozzy Osbourne and Vince Neil both in the music video for that one. That, again, is an Autograph classic, which I hope to hear at M3, along with some of their new music. They got a great new album out. We're going to talk to, newer album came out in 2017. We're going to talk to Steve Lynch about that, about guitar playing, about David Lee Roth, about Van Halen, about Ronnie James Dio, about Motley Crue, all sorts of fun stuff coming up on the podcast today. So if you hear a pounding in the back, that would be my son dribbling a basketball up above me. That it's just insane. The snow days, the half days that the kids have been having, it's like I feel like it's summer vacation again because they're always freaking home and it's driving me nuts. Ugh. Anyways, here we go. This is a little Autograph, new Autograph, followed by my interview with Steve Lynch, the guitar player of Autograph, the mastermind, if you will, behind at least the contemporary version of the band. And I would say always one of the masterminds behind Autograph, you know, the classic Autograph too. So here we go. A little brand new or somewhat new from 2017 Autograph here on Talking Metal, followed by my interview with Steve Lynch. And then a little bit later, we're going to hear from Doro.
Claim you were right. is Mark Striegel from Talking Rock and Talking Metal, and what an honor to speak with the one and only Steve Lynch of the great band Autograph. So great to talk with you again, Steve.
Great to talk with you again as well, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. We just heard the song Every Generation off the Get Off Your Ass album, which came out in 2017. And I know the last time we spoke was in person at the M3 Festival, and that record was just about to drop. And I'm so psyched because it's official. You guys will be back at M3, the greatest American rock festival. And that's happening May 3rd, 4th, and 5th at the Merriweather Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. I'll be back down there again this year. I hope we can hang out. And M3 is just a great time, isn't it, Steve?
It's like my most favorite festival to play. And this will be our third time, and I'm really looking forward to it. We just had such a great time the other two times that we played there, and we're all just really excited to be back again. It's just a great venue to play.
Absolutely. And again, that is the Merriweather Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. Autograph will be there along with a lot of other great bands. Vince Neil, Steven Adler will be doing a set of Guns N' Roses, Vixen, Tora Tora. I mean, the list goes on and on. Of course, Whitesnake. So it's going to be a great, great hang. We hope all the Talking Metal listeners will join myself and Steve at the festival. And like I said, I saw you guys there in 2017, and it was just a great performance. And that was before the I guess I'd call it newer album at this point, Get Off Your Ass, came out. And I got to tell you, I'm hoping you include a couple songs off that album in your set this year, because it is a great, great listen. I really enjoyed the record. I really love the song we heard, Every Generation. Of course, the title track is great. Ready to Get Down was a good one. Really good, and yet kind of a different sound for Autograph. You still kind of had your foot in what Autograph used to be back in the day, but it was definitely a different sound. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, we're not using keyboards. We decided to just go with the two guitars, you know, the singer plays rhythm guitar and myself, and it's a bit more raw sounding, and that's the way we wanted it. We wanted it to be like more in your face and more current, and I think that we succeeded in doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it is a great record. We encourage everyone to check it out. Get Off Your Ass. And were you with a certain producer? Were you self-produced? Who did you work with on the album?
It was self-produced. We produced it ourselves.
Cool, because it has a real live feel. I mean, I don't know if that's just from you guys practicing, or did you get in a room and play it live? Like, how did the recording process actually work?
Well, it actually was, we just laid down our parts separately, but because we all lived in different places. I was living in Seattle at the time. Now I'm down in Florida. And Randy, the bass player, was living in Atlanta, so we were flying in to do our parts. And, you know, so that's the way we had to do it. We rehearsed it live, you know, enough times so we knew exactly the way that we wanted it to sound and the direction we wanted the recording to go in. But, you know, we just wanted more of that raw feel. And I think that came across on the record. And I'm really happy with the way it came out. Everybody is.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I know, you know, at these festivals like M3, everyone wants to hear the old tunes, but I think it's really important that you get a couple of these new songs in the set list, because people have got to hear them, because they're really, really great, well-written songs, and I'm hoping to hear some live at M3.
Yeah, we're actually playing, we're going to be playing four.
Wow, awesome.
Playing, of course, Get Off Your Ass, Every Generation. We're going to be playing a new one called Meet Me Halfway. And we're going to be playing You Are Us, We Are You. So there's going to be four songs in the set this year of the new material.
Very good. I'm very excited for that. A lot of us became aware of Autograph with, of course, the big hit single, Turn Up the Radio. And you guys, I remember, were touring with Van Halen, of course. But what was your history before that? What, you know, when did you first start playing guitar? Can you give us kind of a little musical history on yourself?
Yeah, well, I started actually playing seriously in 1970, the day that Jimi Hendrix died. I was playing bass before that. I started playing bass in 1967, but I really wanted to switch over to guitar. And when he died September 18th, 1970, that's when I switched over to guitar. I actually took my bass in and traded it in on a Fender Stratocaster at this little store up in Seattle. And
Jimmy was from Seattle, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And so that was the other thing. I kind of looked at him like a neighbor, even though I wasn't living there, you know. I kind of looked at him like a neighbor because he was a Seattle boy as well. And so I just immersed myself in playing. I played in several bands in Seattle, actually a total of five bands before I left to move to Hollywood. My guitar teacher in Seattle was helping start a school called the Guitar Institute of Technology down in Hollywood. And I was actually on the road when he had moved down there. And I called up West Seattle Music to try to set up some more lessons for him because I was coming back into town for a couple of weeks. And they said, well, he's not here. He's down at this new school, the guitar, you know, school that he's opened up down in Hollywood. And I said, what? Guitar school? That's so cool, you know. And so I actually called up information and I got a hold of the school. And the number was 213-462-1384.
I still
memorized it.
That's awesome.
1978, that was.
Wow.
And so I moved in there and that changed my life. I just immersed myself 7 days a week, 10, 12 hours a day of practicing for a year straight. And that's where I developed my two-handed technique and all that. And I had been doing it before that, previous to that, from, you know, being inspired by Harvey Mandel and also a guy named Steve Buffington, who used to do it up in Seattle. And so he showed me some things I could do. And so I was into the two-handed stuff way back then. But I really got into it when I went to the Guitar Institute of Technology and saw the instrumentalist Emmett Chapman, who invented the Chapman stick, when he did a quick bat. And I just went hog wild on that. I just went, okay, this is it. This is. And so I wrote out everything I was learning, all the scales, all the, you know, the pentatonics and the arpeggios and triads and everything. I put it all down on paper, but to play with two hands instead of one. I figured out where the scales were with two hands, you know. And so I wrote all this, and eventually at the end of the year, I had enough easily for a book, and I did write a book, and that got published right away.
Wow.
It became a bestseller. And then I played in a few bands after graduating from there. I was in a fusion band, a jazz rock thing, just an instrumental thing. And then I was playing in a group called Viva Beat on Verve Records. I was playing with Holly Penfield on Dreamland Records with Mickey Chin and Mike Chapman producing that.
Okay,
and,
cool.
And in fact, I was playing that. Pardon me? Go ahead.
No, it's interesting. Was that more like a jazzy thing or was that rock? Like, what was that all about musically?
Okay, well, the thing that I was in, that was jazz rock stuff. That was all instrumental. And it was called just fusion. That's what it was called. And then the Viva Beat group that I was playing with, that was more like new wave kind of stuff. It was just all really experimental stuff. So it was really cool, actually, because we did whatever we wanted to in it. And it was very experimental. So that was awesome. And then I was playing with Holly Penfield, and that was more like a pop thing. I was just like helping write and playing in the band. Then we finished recording with her. And that's when we were all rehearsing what became Autograph. We were just rehearsing at Victory Studios in North Hollywood. And Andy Johns, the producer, famous for, you know, engineering, you know, bands like Led Zeppelin, John Lennon, and et cetera, et cetera,
right,
et cetera. The list goes on and on and on. He came down to the rehearsal and he heard some of our original songs that we were working on. And it was just a side project, you know. But we were really liking the way the stuff was coming out. So when he came down, we played it for him. And he said, hey, I got some free time down at Gower Studios in Hollywood. Let's go cut a demo. And so we did. And it was a five-song demo. We just banged it out one day, all the recording, and mixed it the next day. And then Kenny, our drummer, was jogging every morning at 8:30 with David Lee Roth up Sunset Boulevard. So they were this big health kick. David asked him, what are you guys doing? What are you doing? You know, and Kenny said, well, I'm playing in this group called The Coup on A&M Records. And Kenny said, you know, I've got this new project together. There's no name or anything. But anyway, we're just rehearsing and cutting some songs. We just got a demo. And so David wanted to hear it. And so they went back to his place after their jog, and Kenny played it for him, and David loved it. And he said, Kenny, you guys want to come out and open us for us on the 1984 tour? And Kenny said, well, I'll see if everybody's available, because at the time I was playing with Holly Penfield. He was playing with The Coup on A&M Records. And Steve Plunkett was playing in a group on Columbia Records. And Randy Rand, our bass player, was playing with Lita Ford. And so we thought, well, maybe we can go out for a few months, you know, because this is a great opportunity. I mean, we didn't have a name for the band or anything. We thought this would be a great opportunity to go out and play some really cool shows.
And no record deal in place at this point, right?
No record deal. We just went out and we thought, well, we'll go out with them for a few months. It ended up being a lot longer than that. And along the way, you know, we started getting these offers from, Geffen, A&M, Warner Brothers. The list goes on and on, but we were getting offers thrown at us. And RCA offered us a deal we couldn't refuse. It was, you know, keeping 100% of the publishing, which is unheard of. And so we actually signed a deal with them backstage at Madison Square Gardens in New York.
Wow.
And then they shortly after that, they pulled us off the Van Halen tour and said, it's time to start cutting the album. And so we wrote some more songs and went in and did it. And we actually, you know, at this point, of course, we had a name. You know, we chose the name. We drove from L.A. to Jacksonville, Florida to play the first gig with Van Halen. And we came up with the name Autograph on the way there. We didn't have a name.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So, yeah. So it was just like we were just going by the seat of our pants. It was just absolutely crazy. But it seemed to work out. So
absolutely. And man, what a story. That is great. But to kind of circle back a little bit, it's interesting because you were at the Guitar Institute of Technology when you were younger. And that was really like I remember hearing about that in the 80s. It kind of exploded. But at that time when you were there, I think you said 78. What was the like how many people were going there at that point? Was it a lot smaller than what it became later?
I think it was a total of 70 when it started.
Okay.
Off, but there was only like 30 that actually graduated. Yeah, because it was the school was brand new. They were still writing the curriculum.
Right.
While I was there.
Wow. Wow.
You know, and so I mean, they didn't have a whole year's worth of curriculum yet, and so they were still writing it while I was attending, and you know, I was just totally into it. Those, it was all jazz teachers, but I took that jazz and I turned it into rock, and some of the jazz teachers didn't like it very well, but I was just doing my own thing, you know.
Right on.
But it was definitely a life changer. That was a really, really great experience. One of the best things I've ever done for myself in my life.
Awesome. Awesome. Cool. And you, of course, did the Van Halen tour. And I know last time you were on, we spoke a lot about that actual tour. But I wanted to talk to you about some of the other big bands that you shared tours and shows with. And just, you know, just a couple of thoughts or memories of playing with these groups, if you don't mind. Let's start with Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, that was great. Ronnie was such a nice guy. I mean, he just really catered to anything that we needed and everything. And we hit it off really good with him. I mean, the audience really liked him. And I know they were like more of a heavy metal type band, but you know, playing live, we were pretty heavy too. So we were very well accepted on that tour. And a funny little thing happened on that tour that I have to share this little story.
Absolutely. Please.
You know, God bless Buddy James Gill, you know, God bless Ronnie. But, anyway, me and the keyboard player were walking backstage at this arena, and there was this door, a little short little door where they push all the chairs into from the arena. It was storage for the chairs. And backstage, there was just this tiny little door. And Steve, the keyboard player, asked me, he said, I wonder, do you know what that's for? And I said, oh, that's Ronnie's door. You know? And, because it was just a short little door because he's a short guy.
Right.
I didn't know Ronnie was just a few steps behind us, and he started laughing.
Oh, man.
That was really funny. that was really funny, Lynch. And I went, oh, no, no, Roddy, I'm so sorry. You know, but he says, no, 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 it's all good. That was really funny.
Wow. So, could laugh at himself. That's great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he was like that. So, but that was really cool. And he bid us farewell after the tour and said he's going to miss us, but we had to pull out and go on another tour that we were committed to at the time. And I believe that was Aerosmith.
Right. Well, that's another one I was going to ask you about. How were the Aerosmith guys?
It was really cool on that tour. They sounded great. At that point, they had just gotten out of rehab. And so we weren't even allowed to have beer on our tour bus, let alone backstage or anything. And we had to stay on the other side of town from them because, you know, they had just gotten out of rehab and they had very strict stipulations on what we could have around, you know, and then there was no booze, no nothing, you know, it was just like completely, nope, these guys got to stay straight. And, so that's the way it was. And, but I got to know Steven Tyler and Joe Perry and it was just really cool. You know, it's just a great tour and, you know, it turned out really, really well for us and them.
Very cool. What about Motley Crue? You did some, was it a tour with them or was it just some shows?
Oh, no, it was a whole tour.
Whole tour, right. How'd that go? You don't remember it?
I don't remember it.
Okay. Well, that...
I do, but I remember bits and pieces, but it was way over the top. I mean, put it this way, I stopped drinking for 5 years after that tour.
Oh, my God. Wow, okay.
There was just... So I'm just going, I just can't do this anymore. No, no. No, so I bailed out of... You know, that whole scene, basically, I still toured and everything, but I just didn't partake in anything at all after that point. But it was a gas. I can tell you that. It was so much fun. I would end up, you know, some of us would end up on their tour bus. Some of them would end up on our tour bus, you know, because we're all going to the same place, obviously. And so it didn't matter. But it was just one heck of a party. I mean, it was the Theater of Pain tour, and it was a Theater of Pain, believe me.
Yeah, I hear you. Wow. Great stuff, Steve. And, you know, Motley Crue have this movie coming out on Netflix called The Dirt. I guess it comes out on March 22nd. And there's been some talk because in the trailer, it appears that they've kind of the actors who are playing the band, their look is a little different. They've adjusted their look. They're not going to have the big, big hairspray hairdos that Motley Crue had. They're kind of maybe toning that down, maybe making it look a little different than it actually was. And I wanted to ask you, because you guys, you know, very musical band, had great songwriting, great playing, but you also were a visual band. You had an image, you had the hair, you had the clothes. When you look back on that, do you embrace it or do you kind of maybe shun it, which it seems maybe Motley Crue's doing that a little bit with The Dirt? I'm speculating here with Motley Crue, but just for you personally, how do you look back on the band's image in the 1980s?
Well, I think it was I really think it was a little bit over the top. You know, the band had to talk me into, you know, growing my hair out and I mean, you know, having it curly like that. I didn't get a perm. That's actually my natural hair is being that curly and that big. You know, if I were to let it grow out, I could still wear that same too. But, you know, the clothes were a little bit too colorful for me. But it was, you know, that was the sign of the times then. But I was more of a 70s guy. I like just, you know, like the, I like the bell bottom pants back then. And I was just, more of a simple dresser on stage, but, you know, I, you know, went along with the whole thing, but I always thought it was just a little bit over the top, but it was fun. You know,
right.
What can I say? It was fun.
Right.
It was fun. A lot of color and everything. And even our image started to change. It started to get a little bit tougher towards the end of the 80s.
Yes.
You know, because we toned down the colors and everything. And that's where I liked it. I liked it more like that. I didn't like it to be quite so over the top.
Right. I hear you. Very good. Very good. And was on the website and I saw you guys have your own signature coffee brand. Now, is that with David Ellefson's coffee company?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh. Ellefson Coffee Company. And that, through EMP Label Group and all that, the label that we're on. And yeah, we got get off your ass coffee, you know, the perfect name for it, because that's what coffee does. Makes you get off your ass.
Right. Right on.
Worked out very well.
Cool. And so the album then, Get Off Your Ass, that came out on his label too.
Yes. EMP. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. I did not know that. And how did you get to know David?
Through this guy, this manager that we're working with at the time. He was just kind of, co-managing us with the band. He was just making some connections as far as, getting the record deal together. That's really what he was doing. And, his name was Peter Kalish, and great guy. And he got us this record deal. Then we signed through EMP Label Group. We also signed with SPV Records in Europe and Scandinavia. And then we signed with King Records in Japan. So it was three different labels we actually signed all at the same time. And so that's that. So these albums are available pretty much everywhere now.
Yeah, and again, I really, really love the record, Get Off Your Ass, the autograph record that is probably, about a year and a half old at this point. Definitely worth checking out if you haven't heard it, guys. And I'm completely psyched to see you guys. You're saying four new songs at the M3 Festival. I love hearing that, and I'm going to love hearing them live. And I guess to wrap up, where do you see the band going from here? I mean, the album is still rather new. I would think you're probably not working on new music yet, or are you?
Not as of yet. We're tossing around some ideas, but we still look at it like, you know, this is the Meet Me Halfway is the third single that we're releasing. The first one, obviously, was Get Off Your Ass, and the second one was Every Generation, but Meet Me Halfway is the third one. And we look at it like there's still another single or two to release a video on. We're working on the video for Meet Me Halfway right now, actually. And that'll be released probably in about 2 months. And
cool.
So we're just touring and, releasing more stuff off of that album before we, go into the studio and start recording on the second album again.
Okay, awesome. Great. And I look forward to connecting with you at M3. I was thinking maybe if you could reach out to Randy, I'd love to maybe do a sit-down in-person interview with him at M3.
That wouldn't be a problem at all.
Yeah, I'd love to talk with him.
I'm the person to talk to about that. You can just call me up right before we get to M3 and, text me whatever you want to do, and then I'll go ahead and set the interview up with Randy.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. And thanks for your time. I'm going to send you a link when we get this posted, probably in about a week.
Okay. That sounds great.
Get Off Your Ass by Autograph. That's from 2017. Big thanks to Steve Lynch for joining us. I'm sorry my microphone was messed up. It was like a little distorted. I don't know what happened. I've had some technical problems on this recent batch of interviews, various different things. You know, I've been doing a lot of these on Adobe Pro and Adobe Audition. I won't even get into it. I'm not going to bore you with that shit. Anyways, I hate the monitor function on Adobe Pro. It's not working for me. That's why, I don't know, I've been kind of going back and forth between that and GarageBand to put these things together. Yeah, that's boring stuff. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Doro. Not boring. I saw Doro with Warlock open up for Megadeth way back in the day and saw them down a couple of years ago at the New Jersey Rock and Food Truck Festival or whatever the hell that thing was. It was a rainy, muddy weekend, but a lot of fun. And I'm psyched that there is a new tour for Doro. It sounds like she's going to get to some places she hasn't been in a while. And yeah, let's talk to Doro about what's going on with Doro, which there's a lot of stuff going on. So stay tuned for that. But first, let's hear the song that this is a great song. This is called Living Life to the Fullest off the Forever Warriors Forever United album that came out back in 2018, not that long ago. So here we go. Some new Doro here on Talking Metal, followed by my interview with Doro Pesch.
Living life to the fullest, living on to a dream, living life full of ecstasy is all that you need. Living life to the fullest, living on the belief, living on with integrity is all to be free. I'm so grateful to have known you. I'm so grateful for all. And you know, living life to the fullest, living on the belief, living on with integrity, it's all to be free. Lem, you always put it your way, your way. Living honest and true. Sometimes lonely and far away, I feel just like you. We feel just like you. Living life to the fullest, living on to a dream, living life full of ecstasy is all that you need. Living life to the fullest, living on. Never leave. Living on with integrity. It's hard to be free. We'll be right back. living on to a dream, living life full of ecstasy. It's all that you need. Play the game to the fullest. Play on, never leave. Play it all with integrity. Play on to be free. You all set us free.
Now we are real ladies, John.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and what an honor. On the line, we have Duro Pesh. How are you?
Hey, very good, very good. Yeah, I'm getting all excited. We start our European tour next week and then heading over to the States and doing the tour with Metal Church. And yeah, I'm totally excited. So yeah.
I am too, because this is going to be a great tour. Two of my favorites, Duro and Metal Church together touring. I know you guys are coming through New Jersey on May 10th the famous Asbury Park, New Jersey. Last time I saw you play was down in that area. It was like a rainy weekend, the Rock and Food Truck Festival. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember. I think Twisted Sister, they played. And it was a big festival, but yeah, the weather was so, oh God, it was so bad.
And yeah.
I mean, we had fun, but it was so cold. I remember it was in October, and open air in October is always, that's hardcore. But,
yes.
But the diehard fans that were there, and they were cheering us on. And yeah, I think we all had a great time, but it was rough, yeah.
We definitely did. And, I can't wait. May 10th, Asbury Park, New Jersey, at the Asbury Lanes. Of course, this tour is just, it's a pretty big tour. You guys are going all over the country. You're starting in Las Vegas on April 17th.
Yes.
You will hit California. Then you're going to Arizona, Chicago, Illinois, places like Racine, Wisconsin. Like, I don't think you've played Wisconsin in quite some time. So this tour will take you to some places you haven't been in a while, right?
Yes, absolutely. Last year we did a tour where we only played the Triumph and Agony album, and there we played Los Angeles and Whiskey and New York and all, and Chicago. But now you have more cities, and actually towards the end of the year we want to even do some more, like, because Texas we are not hitting now, but we will, and Cleveland and all that stuff. But I'm very excited, especially with Metal Church. We are great friends for such a long time, and so I guess it will be especially something for diehard old school metal fans as well. Of course, we both have the new records out, which we will play the best songs of these new records, but I will play everything from All We Are, Burning the Witches, everything, whatever,
awesome.
Get the metalheads, headbanging and stage diving and all that good stuff.
Cool. And was it you reaching out to the Metal Church guys, or was there a promoter, booker involved? Like, how did a whole tour come about? Who set it up?
Actually, I tell you, I heard about it quite a while now. I think it's like floating around, that idea, for years, and now the promoter he put it all together, and we are like, the booker is TKO, and then suddenly we had a whole tour, but I think it was a long time we were thinking about doing something together. So
very, very cool. And you said you'll get all the classics from Duro. But then again, you're gonna hit some new material, I hope, because you had a great album out in 2018, Forever Warriors, Forever United.
The first double album ever, and there are 25 songs on it, and I love them all. And we will definitely play all the highlights, of course, All for Metal, which is like an anthem, like All We Are. And we played already a couple of gigs in Europe, and All for Metal was the song. Actually, before we hit stage, people were already singing it, so that always made me feel good. And
that's awesome.
And then stuff like Bastardos, that's a very fast, heavy, aggressive song. We have some special effects on Bastardos, and then probably Blood, Sweat and Rock and Roll. And and then
what about Living Life to the Fullest? You gonna do that one?
We start and we end with this, and we have intro tape, because that was actually the first song I wrote for this record, and in honor of Lemmy Kilmister. And we have been so great friends for so many years, and this song, it just it just popped out, melody and lyrics. And I was on my way to Lemmy's funeral and totally devastated, heartbroken. And suddenly this melody came into my mind and the lyrics, everything was there. And I thought, man, I got to record it right away. And I did. And then I thought, yeah, this album should start with Lemmy's song, Living Life to the Fullest, and end with a Motorhead song. And we covered Lost in the Ozone. That's second. Oh, on the second disc, it's the last song before the bonus track. So, yeah, but yeah, we start and end with this song. But sometimes I tell you, it's almost too sad to sing. So, right. So when it's an intro tape and an outro, that's like, that's nice. But yeah, I think it will take me a little while till we really can do it live.
Fair it's enough. Like, and when did you first meet Lemmy?
Oh, in 1983 was my first time in England, and I had to do a little showcase, and my life was on the line, like the whole band, everybody was counting on me. So I went to England and I had to do this showcase, but not with my band. It was some, you know, musicians, and we did a couple of songs at soundcheck, and I think it sounded all right. I couldn't speak English at all. It was like so early on. So I had a little time to kill, and then I went into a little pub, and guess who was there? Lemmy.
And pub, Lemmy, for sure, right?
And he had, you know, cigarettes, and he had like whiskey cola. And then he said, hey, are you Doro of Warlock? And I said, yeah. I said, you Lemmy? He said, yeah. And then we hugged each other. We liked each other right away. I mean, yeah, right away. And then he said, hey, Doro, have a little whiskey cola. So we were starting to talk, and, you know, we had such a great time, and I was drinking. And then Lemmy said, hey, Doro, don't you have to do a showcase? Don't you have to do a gig? And I said, Lemmy, oh, God, I totally forgot. And hours later, so I went into this other club. I was so drunk. And then already were so mad because I came late, and I hopped on stage, and then the band started. And then at that moment, I thought, man, I don't even know the lyrics anymore. I don't know anything anymore.
Oh, no.
I was so wasted. And then I sat myself on the drum riser, and, you know, I thought, okay, let the band play instrumental. And then I was waiting, and then 20 minutes later, they were done. And I went off stage, and then everybody said, okay, girl, you now ruined your life. You know that you will never get a record deal. You will never tour the world. And I said, yes, I know, but I'm best friends with Lemmy Kilmister of Motorhead. And then I said, what? And then Lemmy was standing there, you know, and he had this big smile. And I said, yeah, you know, we just got to talk, and I drank a little bit, smoked cigarettes, and I forgot time. And then they started all laughing, and I said, okay, come on, girl, you get your record deal. So that's how I got my record deal. And if it wouldn't have been for Lemmy, you know, I would have done whatever, you know, I would have worked in a factory my whole life. But it worked out. So that was my first time I've seen in 83, 84. And then we toured many, many times together, and we did many duets. And the last duet was actually on our last record, Raise Your Fist. We sang this beautiful song, It Still Hurts, together. And the first two duets, it was on the Calling the Wild album. And yeah, he was the best. I loved Lemmy, and I still do. I think of him every day. And yeah, the same like with Ronnie James Dio. And
right.
These two people were the most important to me in my life, you know. Yeah.
Right on.
So, yeah.
Man, that's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the alcohol and drinking with Lemmy and partying. Because there's a song on the new record that I really like called Metal Is My Alcohol, which has kind of a punky vibe to it, you know, punk rock vibe almost. And it made me wonder, do you still like to drink a little? Do you still drink alcohol, or do you just need the metal?
Mark, that's medalist to me. That is my drug. That is my alcohol. I don't need anything else. I need the fans and metal. And I don't drink much at all, because I always drive everybody home. So the band, the road crew, everybody, they can always count on me. I stay sober. I drive everybody home or wherever they want to go. And I always drove Lemmy around while I was driving the car. I didn't drink at all. And usually when I hop on stage, I rather focus on the fans and focus on the music. And I don't drink much at all. So, yeah.
Well, I love that too. That's a great song. Too. Metal Is My Alcohol. It's a great song.
Yeah, no, it's fun. No, it gives you good energy. And yeah.
Very cool. And, you know, it's been almost 30 years since that self-titled Doro record that came out, which is just mind-boggling to me, an album that I loved. And looking back on that, you know, everyone always says, oh, well, you worked with Gene Simmons on that, which you did. But the other one of the other co-producers on the record was a guy named Tommy Thayer, who, of course, now is in Kiss and went on to do a lot of great things. What was it like working with Tommy on that album almost 30 years ago? Any memories you can share of him?
Yes, actually, I remember he came to my hotel room in LA and he was so organized. And I thought, wow, you know, he's like, you know, he immediately we sat down and talked about some ideas. And, you know, he's super reliable, which, you know, is sometimes great. Like sometimes musicians, they, you know, they love to party and all.
Right.
But he was very, very, you know, and he took it serious. And I liked it so much. And then I said, hey, Tommy, you know, I like this kind of, you know, song or this solo. And he was, you know, you could totally rely on him. And that was awesome. And so I can imagine that Gene liked him so much because, you know, you can really count on him, you know. You will never have to fear that he will not show up or something. So he was really cool. And he used to be in the band Black and Blue. And
yes.
He was a fine guitar player and, you know, like very, you know, and if I would tell him, hey, can you play that again? He was like, you know, he remembered everything. So, you know, he was definitely awesome. He was great. And then together, the combination with Gene and Tommy, it was awesome because sometimes I was a big Kiss fan growing up. And to me, you know, sometimes when you meet, like, you know, your idol, it's like a little bit like, you know, I got nervous. And,
right.
You know, I remember my knees were shaking when I walked into the studio. And then a couple of songs, I had to go full out, you know, and scream and stuff. And then when Gene was there, I thought, maybe I'm holding back. So, you know, so sometimes I felt, you know, it's more comfortable to sing with Tommy because Tommy, you know, he was not as intimidating to me as Gene was. So, you know, so we had a great, great work relationship, you know, great friendship. And Gene, he was awesome, man. He was awesome in the studio. He really cared. And, you know, there was one song, it was Mirage, which Gene Simmons wrote, and you know, we were mixing it. And I thought, man, the mix is not coming out so great. And then he said, Dory, you know what? Don't get nervous. Go into your hotel room and, you know, let me see. And then next morning, like 8 or 7 o'clock, somebody called me from the reception. And I said, hey, there was a gentleman here and there's a cassette or a debt. And I said, okay, I will go and get it. And then I put it into, I think that doesn't exist anymore, but, you know, it was a better way of a cassette.
Right,
so
right.
I put it into my little player and I tell you, the mix came out so great. And I thought, wow. And I thought, man, Gene was sitting there all night till 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, doing this fantastic mix. So I tell you, I owe him a lot. And yeah, and being a big fan, you know, it was a little bit overwhelming, but it was great. I had the time of my life. And yeah, it was awesome. We just met in the Czech Republic and there was a great festival. It's called Masters of Rock. And then it was the Gene Simmons band. And I said, hey, you want to sing a song together with Gene, with us? And then we did War Machine. And, you know,
oh,
and
awesome.
It came out great. And yeah, so it was so cool. And yeah, yeah, I know they are now on tour. I haven't seen the show yet. But yeah, I'm still a big Kiss fan. And
awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Any...
I knew it would be one of a lifetime, that record, you know. It was 1 year of like... Yeah. A dream come true.
Did you ever think back when you were doing that record, do you ever think, wow, I wonder if Tommy will ever end up in Kiss? Was that ever a thought that entered your mind or not?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't think that.
No.
You couldn't foresee that. No. But I saw that Gene and Tommy, they got along really great. They were great friends. And yeah. But no, I didn't expect it. No.
Dora, what was your first concert? What was your first live music experience just as a fan going to see somebody perform?
Yeah, I had my first band when I was 15, and the name of the band was Snakebite. And we were all big White Snake fans. And then we went to see this live concert, my first live concert of a rock metal band. And it was Whitesnake. And I tell you, I was blown away. It was so awesome. And David Coverdale, he was such a god, like singing, performing, the whole vibe. It was a legendary lineup, and it was in 1980, and it inspired me so much. And yeah, and then because it was my first concert I've seen, which was so intense, so amazing, I wanted to cover a song of Whitesnake. And on the new album, it's Don't Break My Heart Again. So so I did it, and it was spectacular. And I tell you, boy, man, it took a long time till I seen a concert like the quality, and you know, like it was state of the art. And I think the next concert was like Judas Priest and Accept a couple of years later. And yeah, but after a Whitesnake concert, I thought every concert is like that, but no, it wasn't.
Right on. And where in Germany did you grow up?
I grew up in a truck. My dad, he was a truck driver.
Oh, okay.
And our apartment, it was in Düsseldorf, Germany. But I grew up it was like a lot of steel and coal mines and stuff. And it was around Düsseldorf, but yeah, it's the Rhine area. But I always wanted to go to America my whole life. And then in 1986, I had a little promotion tour. It was on our True as Steel record. 3 days, I went to New York. And I thought, I'm going to stay. And then after 2 days, you know, I called my family, my friends. I said, hey, I would stay in America. And they said, yeah, you're crazy. And I said, no, I'm serious. And then I stayed. And I got lucky. I ran into so many great people. And we recorded the Triumph and Agony album in New York City in the Power Station studios. And there was a great friend of mine, Joey Bannon. He was the producer. And many great people played on this record. Cozy Powell, he played drums on it. And, and awesome people. So yeah, and then I found a way to stay. And then I got my green card a couple of years later. So yeah, so I grew
That's
up
awesome.
In Germany, but my heart was always, in America.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I remember the first time I saw you was opening for Megadeth at a theater in Boston, and you guys were so good, Warlock, that night. Just really rocked it. That was a great introduction to Doro. So
Then you will see my old guitar player from the Triumph and Agony tour. From the Triumph and Agony record, Tommy Bowen, he will be with us on tour.
Awesome.
This metal church tour. Yeah, because the two guitar players I have here, one boy is Italian, Luca Pinciotta, and a Dutch girl, Bas Maas, and they will not be on this America tour because we didn't get the work visas in time with the shutdown and stuff. So it takes at least 3-4 months. So Tommy Bowen is playing and Chris Caffrey.
And wow, great.
Chris,
yeah.
He did a couple of tours with us. So it will be lots of soloing and shredding and high energy. And then Johnny D on drums and Nick Douglas on bass. The guys are with me for almost 28 years.
Wow, that's
years,
awesome.
Yeah.
And the tour is going to be just awesome. Again, I'm not sure if I'm going to hit Asbury Park, which is on May 10th, or there's a New York show at the Highland Ballroom, which is a club I like a lot, that's on May 7th.
Oh Mark, it changed because the Highline Ballroom is no more.
Oh, no, did it? Okay.
Yes, and yeah, so we changed to Brooklyn.
Oh, cool.
And it's the same date, but we're playing in Brooklyn now. And I played so many gigs in Highland Ballroom, but I guess the same people who were running BB Kings, which I loved so much, club. And it's no more. When it got announced, Highland Ballroom, then the same week they said, it's no more.
Will
be Brooklyn.
Brooklyn works for me too, yeah.
Yeah, Brooklyn
awesome.
Was my very first show in the States ever. It was L'Amour's Brooklyn. In 87, back in the day. So Brooklyn was always cool too. And
you got the Whiskey A Go-Go on April 19th. You're at Reggie's in Chicago, a pretty famous club on May 2nd. And again, Wisconsin on the 3rd. You're all over. Flint, Michigan on the 4th. The guys, we'll have the tour dates up on Talking rock.net and talkingmetal.com. Cool. And we cannot Super. Wait to see this tour. It is going to be yes. just explosive. Great
oh,
stuff.
Oh, man, I cannot wait to. And, you know, seeing all the diehard metalheads again, all the diehard fans, and, you know, and, yeah, and together with Metal Church, I think it will be a great package. I already feel
it will be.
So good about it. No, yeah.
Very good. Cool. So I hope we can come say hi to you at one of the dates.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Come and have a beer. And since you know now, I don't drink much, but a little.
Okay.
That's cool. Okay. After a show, after a good show. Yeah.
Right on. Right yeah. on. Well, best of luck with the rehearsals. And again, we cannot wait for this American tour with Metal Church starting in April. It is going to be awesome. And what a pleasure. Thank you for sharing the stories with us.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome talking to you and Jan. And I want to say hi to all the great metal people. Keep on rocking, stay metal, and see you very soon, guys and girls.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
All we are, all we are, we are all we need.
All we
here on Talking Metal, that is All We Are, featuring the great Doro Pesch on vocals. I would think you're going to hear that in concert if you go to this tour that she is out doing with Metal Church. I cannot wait for it. It's coming soon, guys. And she called me back after the interview to let me know that, again, that New York date has been changed, and it's not at the Highland Ballroom. Apparently, they've gone out of business, which I can't even keep up to date with the changing face of rock clubs in New York. They just seem to be going under like flies. It's crazy. But anyways, the Doro Metal Church show has been moved over to Brooklyn to a club that I'm hearing a lot about. I haven't been out there yet. Kingsland. The Kingsland Club in Brooklyn. Let me pull it up right now on the interweb. Yeah, Kingsland. Here we go. Kingsland. It is –
Well, I can't find an actual website for the Kingsland. Let's see here. But yeah, I mean, their tickets are on sale. Am I spelling it wrong? I don't know. That's weird. I don't know why I don't see a website, but here's the Kingsland Brooklyn. Here's a Twitter account. Let's go there. Oh, okay. Yeah. KingslandBK.com is the website. This connection is not private. And for some reason it's blocked on my computer. I don't know why. That's really bizarre. People used to say that would happen with Talking Metal, but we fixed it. So anyways, the Kingsland Brooklyn Club is where the Doro Metal Church show is happening. And I wish I had a date for that. And the date of that show is May 7th, Tuesday night in Brooklyn. That might be better than the Asbury Park show for me. I'm not sure. I got to figure that out. I want to see this tour. I'm planning to see this tour. And it's a Doro Metal Church and Images of Eden. We're going to hear a little music by them later on in the show, so stay tuned for that. Thanks to all the Patreon people. Really appreciate you guys supporting us. Really, every one of you. And we have the Talking Metal hoodies for sale. Please purchase those. They're $60. I know that's a little much, but please consider purchasing a hoodie and supporting what we do. You can hit up my PayPal. Just go to talkingrock.net and you can find the PayPal in the support section on talkingrock.net or talkingmetal.com. Yeah, constant updates on my site, which again is talkingrock.net. Please check it out and show your support. Use our Amazon links to link you over to Amazon where you can go about your shopping as you normally would. And what else? There's t-shirts, of course, for sale, too. They're $20. Or you can just give me a PayPal donation. I would really appreciate that. Anything you can do to help me attempt to monetize what I do here. And yeah, it's been fun. I'm glad I got you this bonus content here on this Friday of this week. We hope to hit you with another new episode on Tuesday. I aim to get the Talking Metal podcast posted at least every Tuesday. Just think Talking Metal Tuesdays. At the end of the day on Tuesday, if you refresh your iTunes feed or wherever you get the podcast, Spotify or whatever, there should usually be a new one waiting for you by the end of the day on Tuesday. Talking Metal Tuesdays. Sometimes I get them up on Monday. Sometimes I'm slagging and don't get them up until Wednesday. But they're almost always there for you on Tuesday. And yeah, that's about it, man. I love you guys. I appreciate all your support. And we're going to end with this band that is on tour with Doro and Metal Church, or about to go on tour with them. They are called Images of Eden. And let's see, their lead guitar player, Byron, sent me over a track. So, yeah, this is cool, man. This is a good deal for them. They're going to be out with two great bands, Doro and Metal Church, on this tour. So check out Images of Eden opening the night for Doro and Metal Church. And we're going to hear one of their songs right now. This is called Harvest Day. It's going to take us out. It's going to end the podcast. And we're going to thank you guys for listening. We're going to see you at M3 with Autograph. I cannot wait. In early May down at the Columbia, Maryland Post-Weather Pavilion. Merriweather, right? Merriweather? What did I? Okay. The Merriweather Post Pavilion. What is it called again? Merriweather Post Pavilion. Yeah, that's what it's called. And it's going to be just such a great time. Warrant, Vince Neil, Vixen, Vane, Tora, who we just had on the podcast. Their new record's good, by the way. Skid Row, Steven Adler playing some Guns N' Roses, Frankie Benelli playing some Quiet Riot, LA Guns, Kix, Kingdom Come, Heaven's Edge, so many more. Firehouse, Extreme, Danger. It's going to be epic. Of course, Whitesnake and Bang Tango. And last but not least, Autograph. I cannot wait to see Autograph. And they, when I said last but not least, they're not playing last. They're, just go to M3. What is the website? Just go to M3RockFest.com and you can see the lineup and everything. I think Autograph plays Saturday, you know, in the late afternoon, I think, but yeah, we'll see. Can't wait to see you guys down there. Whitesnake is playing on that Saturday too. It's going to be epic. Cannot wait. And to take us out, here is Images of Eden. Again, they're opening the Doro Metal Church tour for over 30 dates this April and May. So definitely go see them in Brooklyn at the King's Land. We'll have the tour dates all posted on the website, which is talkingmetal.com or talkingrock.net. We'll see you next time. Join me on Patreon for more behind the scenes action. All right. Thanks. This is Images of Eden.
In the self-made prison, I'm dying.